When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, and welcome to episode 163 of Drink the Movies. I'm Brian here, as always, with Michaela. And Michaela, as we come into our 163rd podcast episode, I just have one question for you.
Okay.
Are you not entertained?
I am. I am entertained by all that we do, but I'm truly entertained by Russell Crowe in probably one of the best performances of his career. I'm going to say definitely one of the best performances of Joaquin Phoenix. Even Richard Harris, some may say. He was only in the film for a whole like 4.5 minutes, but really amazing as Marcus Aurelius in the movie Gladiator, which is what we're going to be talking about today.
That's right. Yeah, we are taking our time machine and going back to the year 2000 to talk about Gladiator, you know, that Ridley Scott film that came in and swept over the world, made a ton of money, won a lot of awards, and really captured the kind of the imagination of people. And you know, especially at the turn of the century, what was possible in terms of this epic storytelling, what we're going to be able to do. And we're going to be talking about all that stuff today. But before we do that, Michaela, we need a cocktail that is reflective of the life and times of Maximus and Commodus. So let's do that. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back to whip up this week's drink.
Tell me what you've been doing, you busy little bee. So says Commodus to his sister, who he also wants to sleep with. It's kind of weird and incestuous, but that got me thinking,
Rome,
Brian.
Man, Rome, Roman Empire stuff.
Right. I mean, they had to come up with an heir some way. I mean, I don't know.
Right.
It got me thinking
about other girls in all of Rome.
None that wanted him. He was so odious. He's so amazing. Joaquin was so good in it because, I mean, I love him and I didn't want to touch him either. It was gross. But it got me thinking about like what we could do for this cocktail, right? And I was scouring the internet, trying to come up with some different things. I thought about like, if they made cocktails back in that time, like what would they be? And turns out they would be really gross. And we still have taste buds that work in 2024. So we came up with the Busy Bee. And it comes from Kelly Sparks of the Queen Bee Mixology. And we found this recipe on seattlerefined.com. I'm really excited about this because it brings in honey, which of course, because it alludes to a bee, but it has maraschino liqueur, which is something that I have learned to love with you over the course of the last couple of years.
Yeah, and what is not to love? Because maraschino liqueur and maraschino cherries are the most delicious things in the whole world. I'm pretty sure of it. And yeah, this drink, of course, comes from that line there in the film when Commodus is laying it out for Lucilla that he knows exactly what's going on, you busy little bees. And we thought that this was going to be really good. There is a surprising lack of drinking in the film. Most anytime you watch anything that's set in like the Roman Empire or something, they're drinking like 100 glasses of wine all the time, but very little of that in this film. But we think that this is nice and it's old in terms of like United States cocktail history, because this is basically a bee's knees, which is a prohibition era cocktail. This one's just going to be jazzed up a little bit. So let's go ahead and make one of these, Michaela. Let's grab a shaker tin and throw in 2 ounces of gin, 1 ounce of maraschino liqueur, 3/4 of an ounce of lemon juice, 3/4 of an ounce of honey, 3 dashes of orange bitters, and 1 bar spoon of Luxardo cherry juice. It's very syrupy, so tread lightly there. Go ahead and throw some ice in there, shake it and strain it into like a coupe glass or a martini glass. You can garnish it with a beautiful flower like Kelly Sparks did, or you can garnish it with Luxardo cherry, or just leave it as is, maybe a lemon peel, something like that. Sip and enjoy. So it's just a little cherry twist on that bee's knees, a classic. Michaela, what'd you think about this one?
Yeah. No, it's very good. I truly loved this drink. So we weren't able to drink this drink together. So I do remember sending you a message saying, what do you think? I'd always like a bee's knees, but I don't know if it's the maraschino liqueur that adds to it, if it's that extra bar spoon of the Luxardo cherry juice, because I really like that. I would recommend not picking a gin that's too floral. I try to pick something that's really even and just balanced. I use Booker's for mine, but if you just try not to get something that's going to have a ton of extra notes in it because you don't want to muddle with the flavor. The honey and the cherry juice created this really syrupy, like coat mouthfeel, coating on your tongue, which I really found delicious. It was my jam for sure, without being like pink or covered in elderflower. So I loved it.
It was kind of pink. That bar spoon of the cherry juice there does tint it a little bit pink. So it's very lo lovely looking. It's very delicious. If I had one sort of complaint or kind of feedback, I guess, for the cocktail is that you're putting like that honey and the Luxardo cherry juice in there. And they're both kind of syrupy. So when you put the ice in and you start shaking it, it tends to basically freeze solid in your shaker tin. So if you're going to be making up these or making up a few of them, you might want to go ahead and make like a honey simple syrup. You can do that by doing two parts of honey to one part of water. So like a half cup of honey and just a quarter cup of water. And that's going to, just loosen it up a little bit to get to your cocktail going there. It's going to come out a little bit easier. It's going to get you more of that honey flavor there into it as well, which is always nice. Always good for some honey. So let us know if you make up a busy little bee and let us know what you thought about it, or if you have any other kind of bee's knees variations. We'd love to hear about all of that. But for now, Michaela, what we better do is we better mix up one of these because we have a battle to fight. We have gladiators to battle with, and we have a whole level of corruption we need to deal with. So let's do this. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back to chat about this week's film, Gladiator.
My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius, commander of the armies of the North, general of the Felix Legions, loyal servant to the true emperor, Marcus Aurelius, father to a murdered son, husband to a murdered wife, and I will have my vengeance in this life or the next.
Spoiler warning for Gladiator. If you've not yet seen this Ridley Scott masterpiece, you should press pause right now. You should go watch it. It's 2.5 hours. I'm sorry, slash, you're welcome. And make yourself up a busy little bee while you're at it, and then come back and we could chat about it because we're going to chat about all the things Gladiator.
Spoiler warning for the movie Gladiator. You've had plenty of time to see this, 24 years, and it's probably going to be making a comeback if I were to guess, because Gladiator Part 2 is coming out later this year. Michaela, I think, or next year, I don't know, sometime soon. We're gonna have to see how that comes along. Maybe we'll talk about it on the podcast one day. This was released in 2000, directed by Ridley Scott, and it stars Russell Crowe as Maximus, the leader of the Roman army turned gladiator, and Joaquin Phoenix as Commodus, the newly anointed Caesar. Connie Nielsen is in this one playing his sister, Lucilla, former love interest of Maximus. And she's going to be playing both sides here for a little bit, and really like her story. So we're going to be talking about that as we get into it a little bit, Michaela. This did pretty well, this movie. It was made on a budget of roughly $100 million and came back with close to $450 million in box office returns. Pretty good, pretty good. And had a pretty good Oscar night as well. Nominated for 12 Oscars and winner of 5. Costume design, Jante Yates is going to be back for Gladiator Part 2, apparently, as well. Won the Oscar for Best Sound, Best Visual Effects, Best Actor for Russell Crowe, and Best Picture of them all. Did have some losses, though. So Phoenix lost for Supporting Actor, and Ridley Scott lost Best Director. It also lost Best Original Screenplay, Cinematography, Editing, Score, Art Direction, and Set Decoration. So, Michaela, 2000, we were like, I don't know. Oscar night would have been, I guess, 2001. So we'd have been like in college. Do you remember like Gladiator being a big deal? Did you go out and see it in college, or did it come to you
I
later?
did.
Oscar night? What's the deal?
So I did. I remember seeing the preview to this and thinking that this was Ridley Scott's answer to Braveheart, that was directed by Mel Gibson. So 5 years earlier. So Braveheart was this really epic story And it crossed a lot of time, and it was maybe 300 years earlier, but it was about, somebody who was revolting and creating this idea of hope and stuff. And I thought that this was a very similar sort of story about someone who was kind of rising up from the ashes and challenging an empire and what that would be. So I was very interested in seeing it. I saw it, and then of course I watched it win Best Picture, which was awesome. And so it kind of created this cornerstone of what now is, has solidified itself in my mind of what like an epic kind of Spartacus-esque, like challenging authority, bringing hope to people, bringing peace and prosperity, and doing that in sort of a historical context, for sure. I only think I saw it maybe one other time, and then for the sake of this podcast, revisiting it. And I'm so glad we did because, there's a lot to this film that I don't think I had a really proper appreciation of 24 years ago that I do now.
Yeah, absolutely. It was really fun to go back in and revisit it. So let's get into it here, Michaela, just a little bit. And basically the film kind of unfolds into three parts. So it gets started, and of you have kind of the very famous visual there of Russell Crowe, your Maximus, kind of walking through this wheat field, running his hand through it, and then we're thrust into the very beginning action set piece of this. We're with the Roman army there that he is the general of, I guess, or commander of, leader of. Anyway, and they're basically on their final battle of this tour that is more or less opening up all of Europe to the Roman Empire. So we've got Marcus Aurelius is there on hand to watch this unfold, and the battle plays out as you might expect. The Roman army is victorious. So Maximus, hero of Rome and confidant of Marcus Aurelius, pretty good place to be at the start of the film if you're Maximus.
What is Rome, Maximus? I've seen much of the rest of the world. It is brutal and cruel and dark. Rome is the light.
Yet you have never been there. You have not seen what it has become. I am dying, Maximus. When a man sees his end, he wants to know there was some purpose to his life. How will the world speak my name in years to come? Will I be known as the philosopher, the warrior, the tyrant? Or will I be the emperor who gave Rome back her true self?
Yeah, but Maximus doesn't want to be there. He wants to be home. He is a farmer, apparently, a wheat farmer, and he wants to be home with his wife and his son, who he hasn't seen in like 3 years. He wants to go back and tend his crops, and he's like, in 3 weeks, that's where I'm going to be. I love the speech that he gives to his men because he's like, look, everybody's got a place they want to be, and if you find yourself in that place, you're probably already dead. So who cares? Like, let's go, team, right? I really love the way we meet Maximus in this opening sequence because you've got all of the inner workings and the choreography of and the cinematography around the battle itself, but then you see him do things that seem a little strange. Like he loves to pick up the earth in his hands and feel it, and that's something that we see him do throughout the film anytime he's going to go into battle. And you don't really know if it's for a pragmatic reason of like making sure that his hands don't get like slimy and sweaty, or if it's something that he does with his like a ritual prayer. But you get to meet him and like the way he shows up for his team and his men, and then the way he shows up respectfully and dissents against Marcus Aurelius, because Marcus Aurelius has plans for him in this kind of last ditch effort to be thought of as a great emperor of Rome. And he Maximus doesn't want any of that glory. He just wants to go home,
Yeah, exactly. You get kind of the insight here at the beginning of the film, and I do think that the first battle, and it's pretty lengthy. It's like the first like 20-ish minutes of the film is kind of this battle and setting it up, and kind of the immediate aftermath of it there. But it's setting up, that Maximus is, kind of this the strategic thinker, and obviously he's a very good leader of men. We find out, kind of directly after that he has this, at least kind of close working relationship, I guess, with Marcus Aurelius, who goes on to then entrust Maximus to take over all of Rome. And Maximus is like, yeah, not that interested in that, to be honest. But luckily, we have someone, unluckily, I don't know, someone is on their way that is definitely interested in that. I really love you have kind of this like motorcade of the Roman royalty coming in on these carriages. And we're introduced to Commodus, played by Joaquin Phoenix, and Lucilla, played by Connie Nielsen. They're on their way. I love kind of their little banter, and you can just see Commodus is basically like foaming at the mouth that his dad's about ready to die, and he's going to get to take over as heir to the Roman Empire as the new Caesar. But Lucilla, you know, is playing it down. She's like, oh, you know, he's old and sick. He's been sick for a long time. He's been sick for like 10 years, and he keeps calling us out here. No big deal. No big deal. But when Commodus finds out from his dad that he's going to be passed over, doesn't take too kindly to that.
Which wiser older man is to take my place?
My powers will pass to Maximus, to hold in trust until the Senate is ready to rule once more. Rome is to be a republic again.
He doesn't. I mean, and here's where I feel like this is the plot hole that is
Maybe
also the thing.
you don't say anything. It seems like he's the kind of guy that would take this news poorly, Marcus Aurelius.
Yeah, this is a historical fiction, right? So, but Marcus Aurelius was a real person, not a stupid guy. He conquered like half of the Roman Empire in his life or something close to it. He did some pretty great stuff. You would think that he would have enough knowingness of his own child's prodigious like want of ambition and like power hungriness that he would not be like, hey, just letting you know, I'm gonna let this other guy who just won this war for me, I'm gonna let him lead. And you know, I failed
that your
you.
Sister's kind
Sorry.
of into.
like that you've been like eyeing forever in this really incestuous and gross way. Yeah, I'm just gonna give all of that to him. Sorry about it. It's my bad. I mean, I love at the end, he's like, you know, these failings that you have are really not your fault. They're my fault as a father. Sorry. And it's like, dude, you're supposed to be smarter than this. You're like a global strategist, and yet you make this mistake. And it's unfortunate that they use that as like the crux of the entire plot of this movie, because I feel like that is a real poor choice. It doesn't
Right.
really hold true to me. And so I found myself watching this film getting more and more angry at Marcus Aurelius's choice, where it's like, are you kidding me right now? You had to have known that this was not going to end well for you or Maximus, right? Did you not
Or any of
care at
Rome
all?
didn't care,
Any of
didn't care.
Rome?
I mean, I guess, you know, you gotta bearer of bad news, I guess. But yeah, seemed like a bad idea. Seemed like a bad idea. So, anyways, Commodus totally snuffs out Marcus Aurelius, right? Gives him like a faux hug kind of thing, and basically suffocates him there. He is dead. Commodus is ready to take over. They come and get Maximus in the middle of the night and say, "Oh, the Caesar is dead." So Maximus goes bedside and he's like, "Oh, how did he die?" And they're like, "Oh, natural causes, no big deal." And then, of course, Commodus is there ready to step in. Maximus didn't give him his word that he was going to take over. Hadn't really told anyone yet, of course. So this is pretty bad timing, I will say. Marcus Aurelius should have at least waited till you were for sure that Maximus was going to take over. And then Commodus says to Maximus, "You know, go ahead and kiss my ring. Bygones can be bygones. You can be my loyal subject. That'll be great." This was the other one for me, Michaela. Why didn't Maximus be like, "Yeah, that's fine, because I just wanted to go home to Spain anyway. Don't care about your politics." Could have done that. But
Yes.
instead, Maximus is like, "No, man, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to kiss your ring. I'm not going to follow you. I'm going to leave." And, you know, people keep messing with Commodus, and Commodus is like, "Fine, I'm going to send the army to arrest you and go kill you. Take that, Maximus."
Take that, Maximus. And not only that, he's like, not only am I you know, Commodus, he's like a giant man child, right? He is the epitome of what we think of as short man syndrome, right? He's like, oh, you're not going to kiss my ring? Well, not only am I going to kill you, but I'm going to go to your farm. I'm going to set it on fire. I'm going to rape and kill your wife. I'm going to hurt, you know, set your son aflame. Like, it's the worst. He's like, burn it all to the ground because he wouldn't kiss a ring. I don't know. I again, Maximus, probably not a stupid person. Apparently, he wasn't real and based on a real person. But I would have thought he would have been smarter and been like, all I have to do is kiss this ring and Rome, it might be screwed, but I get to go home to my
I get to
beautiful
go
wife and
home,
kid that I haven't seen in 3 years.
get to
I
be a
don't know.
farmer.
Again, I am a coward, and that's probably the choice I would have made. Maximus, not a coward, not the choice he makes, and he does pay for it. And it's really a horribly sad moment because he is being told that he's going to be killed, right? They're pretty open about it. And he talks to his friend Quintus, who was like his man at arms or something, and says, "Hey, can you just promise me you'll look after my kids?" And he looks right at him and he's like, "Oh yeah, about that. Your kids are your family is totally
Your
going to be
family's
killed."
toast. Your family's toast. Yeah, for sure. He does have one confidant there, Cicero, who's played by Tommy Flanagan. That's like his I don't know, like his ward, I guess, who helps him, get ready for battle, and all that stuff. So Maximus is able to, kind of get the slip on them, right? They take him out to execute him in the woods. I think he tells him to go for a day's ride and gets the slip on them. He does get wounded though, so he's a little slow making his way back home to Spain. And by the time he gets there, wife and kid, it's a no-go. It's a no-go for Maximus there. So what are you going to do? You're wandering around aimlessly. You're wounded. You're tired. You pass out, and you get caught by some slave traders. That's not good. And they're going to send you to Northern Africa. And guess what? Now you were sold to this guy, Proximo, is played by Oliver Reed. Proximo, probably my favorite character in the film, other than Joaquin Phoenix's Commodus, for sure. But I really like Proximo here, and he's pretty no nonsense. He's like, I'm an entertainer. I just want to make money, and that's what you're going to do for me. Get in there. You're a gladiator now. I don't care if you want to or not, because I'm going to profit off of you either way.
I paid it so that I could profit from your death. And as your mother was there at your beginning, so I shall be there at your end.
That's right. No, Oliver Reed is amazing as Proximo. I love this character. He's one of my favorite characters in this whole show because he talks about how he had once been a gladiator himself and how Marcus Aurelius freed him and said, "Hey, I'm going to do that," because Proximo apparently was really good at making the crowd love him. Because again, this is all entertainment. These were people that, and gladiators were real. These were people that really did live and die by the sword in front of hundreds of thousands of people. And we treated it as if it was like Monday Night Football. It was like no big deal, right? It was like, ah, they cut off his fingers. It's fine. And so, Proximo is like, dude, all you have to do is, not die and make the crowd love you. And that is how you're going to make it through as a gladiator, because at the end of the day, it's just show business that ends in life and death. No big deal. But I do want to talk a little bit about the relationship that Juba, who's one of the African tribesmen who's also taken from his home and family by slave traders, and he's kind of becomes this fast friend of Maximus, right? He helps him with his wound. It's so gross. I
Gross.
love the scene, but
So
it's super
gross.
gross. He wakes up and he's like, there are maggots like hanging out, and he's like, don't touch them. They're gonna clean out all the dead skin and stuff. And oh, it's totally gross. But
Super
apparently
gross.
that was a real thing that happened. That they used to do. But Juba is really like a dedicated friend, like almost immediately. And I really love their relationship because they have these talks about what was your family like before? What do you think you'll see them again? And they both have very different beliefs. I right, because Maximus, he had these like wooden little talisman tokens that he would pray to, and he lo loses them in the whole fight when he is going off to be killed. And so but he will talk openly with Juba about what they think the other side looks like and who's waiting for them and all of that. And I really love that piece because it just humanizes this whole scenario, which we think as well is very entertaining because we're watching a movie about it, but it was also pretty horrible, right? That these people were taken and being like pawns in a play.
Yeah, for sure. And a lot of times in like a war film or like a period piece, you don't get a lot of good like character building. But yeah, the introduction of Juba there and turning it into kind of this friendship and this camaraderie that this group of gladiators has is really good. Juman Honshu is the actor who's playing Juba here. Really, really excellent. And the other really, really excellent part about this, I thought, Michaela, watching it back, you think of Gladiator and you think of like all of the technical merits and stuff when they recreated Rome and recreated the Colosseum and stuff. And we'll talk about that here in a minute. But I really like how they brought to the town of Zuccabar, I guess. It's like the Algerian town where they're taken in the first fights are, because I guess they like actually like reconstructed this whole like kind of like city center where they were going and fighting then in these first couple of fights. I thought that was, you know, epic and amazing. And then we're brought back into the fold with Maximus, you know, being this leader of men, right? He's able to get the gladiators there who by all accounts are scared for their lives, right? They're you know, enslaved and sent out here to live or die or perish. But Maximus gives them a level of hope and confidence that they're going to be able to survive, and does end up winning over the people here.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
And that's going to get this little crew of ragtag gladiators on their way to Rome, because Rome, as we mentioned, they have a new Caesar, and the new Caesar there, Commodus, has decided to, you know, to shine a good light on himself. You know, maybe he wasn't the first choice for Caesar for the people of Rome, but what better way to, you know, warm everyone's icy cold Roman hearts than to have 150 days of death in the gladiatorial ring? So that's what he's going to do. 150 day celebration to celebrate Marcus Aurelius, but to also celebrate Commodus. And now is going to be the opportunity that Maximus needed to go back and confront his nemesis.
Yes. I really love when they come back. And this was the first time I had noticed it, that the people were not pleased. There's like this big welcome home kind of tribute to the new Caesar and Lucilla. And they're both there. Commodus and Lucilla are there, and people aren't super happy. Some of them are screaming profanities and like shaking their fists. And in true Commodus's form, right? Like when he goes to see Marcus Aurelius and they show up at the battlefront, he's not like, hey, let me help with the battle that just happened. He's like, I will sacrifice a bunch of stuff in your honor. And Marcus Aurelius is not impressed, right? So of course, what is he going to do to show his power? He's going to have like 150 days of gladiator fights. And so every gladiator that's in the entire, you know, area of Italy is like, you know, coming into Rome because they need all these people to fight, because they're all going to die within the first couple of battles, right? And I found that to be really interesting, that they talk about the economics of that and like how this is good, but it's also really bad. And even Proximo is like, I'm going to lose like all my men for the next 3 years, because he just wants to look at himself and feel good about what he's doing and pat himself on the back as the new emperor that nobody likes. I just thought that was interesting.
That was pretty interesting. And yeah, we are on our way back to Rome. So we're finally going to be able to get to see that. And as you mentioned, you know, Proximo has said he was a former gladiator and was given his freedom by Marcus Aurelius there. He has got like little wooden sword, and he talks, he, you know, says that Marcus Aurelius touched him on the shoulder, and that was all it took for him to win his freedom. Maximus is like, you weren't friends with Marcus Aurelius. Calm down, Maximus. That's not what he said. He just said, no, I just said that he touched my shoulder and I'm free. Calm down, Maximus. But let's go to Rome. Let's go to Rome. Rome looks amazing in this, especially, you know, for 2000, they're recreating all this stuff that we've only ever been able to, you know, conjure up in our dreams, the way that this, Colosseum, and then, you know, kind of the rest of the landscape of Rome. It looks really, really beautiful. And then you kind of get that first scene of them going into the Colosseum. And apparently this was where about 90% of the special effects budget went, was to that one shot of recreating the first Colosseum scene, because it kind of goes in and it pans around. And that was pretty new at the time in terms of visual effects and making them look right and making it look seamless enough where they could, you know, kind of spin this camera around in there, and you're seeing all of the different levels of the Colosseum and things like that. But Maximus is going to have to make it through three fights if he wants to get one up on the Caesar there, Commodus, right? So we get the first one, and people are already starting to be pretty excited about that one they call Spaniard, including Lucius, played by Spencer Treat Clark, the son of Lucilla.
Gladiator, are you the one they call the Spaniard?
Yes.
They said you were a giant. They said you could crush a man's skull with one hand.
Yeah. I think he does such a great job of kind of having to manage both of his parents or both of his adults, as it were, because his mom has, she seems to have had a very kind of cunningness about her. In fact, Marcus Aurelius has said, you know, you would have made a really amazing emperor. You would have made a great Caesar if you had been born a man. But she was not. And so she's just trying to kind of do the best that she can for her son. Apparently Maximus and her had had a thing in the past. We don't know much about it. But she got married, had Lucius, and then her husband passed. And so now there's this like weirdness between Commodus and Lucilla, where he keeps saying, you know, you should stay with me tonight. And she's like, absolutely not. That's gross. But she does it in a way that somehow does not get her throat slit, because Commodus is capable of anything. And Lucius is like, just really gently, like, talks to his uncle and manages his uncle. But he ends up going to watch one of the first fights. And so he looks down at the Spaniard, who is this gladiator that keeps winning, which is interesting. And the gladiator recognizes his name and knows exactly who he is. And so Maximus has been swearing revenge for the longest time. And I don't know if he catches like a real plan to say, I'm going to win this. And then once Commodus gets closer to me, I'm going to kill him. Or if he just thinks that he's going to just do the best mm-hmm. that he can. And yeah. But he ends up winning tremendously well that first fight. It's real, real bloody.
He ends up winning tremendously well. Yeah, absolutely. So you've got the kid Lucius comes and talks to him, and he finds out that, you know, Lucius is the son of Lucilla, you know, nephew to Commodus. So at this point, Maximus realizes that, you know, Commodus is back. Commodus is there. He's going to be there at the competition. So I really like then you get Maximus. He puts on the helmet to kind of protect his identity. And you think kind of at the outset, they bring in, you know, like the Roman chariots, and they're reenacting some more. It's a pretty epic fight scene there. But kind of at the end, and, you know, Maximus picks up this spear and he's like riding the horse out there, and you think he's just going to, you know, chuck the spear over at Commodus and be done with it. I don't think Maximus really had plans as far as, you know, winning his freedom. Other he was just there to basically kill Commodus and be done with it. Right. Go join his family in the afterlife was really his only plan. But it kind of takes a turn. He gets there. He gets the opportunity and doesn't take it. And at that point, you know, Commodus comes out and, you know, the soldiers kind of surround all of the gladiators there and, you know, gives Maximus the old thumbs up. But not before Maximus is, you know, kind of told to remove his helmet and realizes that this is, you know, this is that guy that you were supposed to have dealt with like a long time ago. And he's back from the dead, as it seems. And now he's going to be a bit of a thorn in your side, because not only do the people of Rome not really care for you, Commodus, you've also got the senators there of Rome also don't care for you. And they're planning a coup. And I'm not like a Roman historian by any stretch of the imagination, but it seemed like if you were a Caesar, basically your only way out was to get assassinated, stabbed in the back by someone. And Commodus is having it come in from all fronts now, including his entertainment that he brought in for his 150-day celebration.
Right. He's super paranoid. This is when imposter syndrome is real. And it's like, dude, you shouldn't be here. Like, read the room. The Senate doesn't want you here. Your sister doesn't want you here. The people don't want you here. But he is way too proud for that. And he knows it. It's really interesting. He's kind of compelled by the crowd to let Maximus live. They go through kind of this banter back and forth. And Maximus says, you know, I was a son to a murdered wife, and I am a father to a murdered son, and I will have my vengeance. And it's like really famous. Lucilla is trying to kind of figure this out between them. And she's the cunning one. So she goes to Maximus's cell. She sneaks in to try and say, hey, look, if you want to meet with Gaius, who's one of the senators, we can figure this out. And of course, Maximus is like, absolutely not. I don't believe you at all. Like, I don't believe any. Nope. Absolutely not. No, I just want my vengeance. Did he send you? I mean, he's very distrustful of her. And you get a feeling that it's because she might've hurt him somehow in the past. And that's why everybody kind of knows they had a thing, but nobody knows they had a thing. And
yeah. Well, it starts right off on that first battle. She's like staring out the tent, like checking them out. And then Marcus Aurelius comes in and sees her there, I think, you know, looking out at him. So, yeah, it's pretty obvious that they had some sort of a fling going way back. But Yeah, I mean, not trustful of anyone here. Maximus, I really like they're kind of sitting around the gladiators there in their little like training camp, little makeshift housing area there, and they go and get their food. And Maximus is even like afraid that someone has poisoned his food, so the one guy, eats it, and then they end up kind of laughing it off. On a side note, they wouldn't have bothered poisoning you; they just go and cut your head off. That's what they would have done. They wouldn't have taken the time to poison your food, for sure. So that is one fight down. We're on to the second fight. Commodus is like, how do I get rid of this guy? Let's bring this old champion gladiator out of retirement. He will come. He's going to wear a really cool mask and come in. You'll have a fight. There's going to be tigers there. Ridley Scott really has a thing for having animals have a bad time in his movies, for sure. But there's tigers there. They look awesome. They're in these pits, and he has this fight with this guy who eventually Maximus gets the one up on there, and the crowd is chanting for him to kill him. Caesar says, thumbs down, kill that guy. But Maximus doesn't, because Maximus is merciful. Maximus the Merciful. Is there anyone else that could be merciful, Michaela?
Well, Commodus certainly thinks he can be. I mean, this really puts him in a tough place, because he's like, what? Now I can't kill him because everybody loves him. And he has like a serious like 5-year-old temper tantrum, and I love it so much. I'm here for it, because this is exactly what you think like a spoiled child would act. This is it, and he does it so well. He's so gross. Because he's like, I we have to figure out how to kill him, but I can't kill him now. Oh, what am I gonna do? And so he tells Falco, his advisor, to follow everybody. He decides that he's gonna have Maximus killed, or he wants to, but he's not gonna have Maximus killed yet, because he might become this martyr, and then it'll be even worse. It's a whole thing, and I love it so much, but it does end up not going so great, because Maximus reconnects with Cicero, as you said, Tommy Flanagan, who is amazing. I love him so much in everything he does. He's like the best character actor in the world. I love him so much. But he's there, and he gives him back
His little figures, yeah.
his little figures, so he can pray properly, which is really cool. He goes on Maximus's behalf to meet with Lucilla and Gracchus. They agree that, hey, if we can help Maximus escape Rome and join his legions up somewhere else, they can, fight Commodus by force, and they can bring all the power back to the Senate. That could be really great. But because Commodus is now freaking out and has his guy Falco like ear to the ground and spying on everybody, Gracchus ends up getting arrested. Lucilla kind of shows up and into this meeting with between Commodus and Lucius, and that's where we get the busy little bee speech, because Commodus is going to find out exactly what happened, and there's this kind of plan on this like feat on top of this plan that they've all constructed to try and get Maximus out of the gladiator, I don't know, stronghold that they're all in, that then goes completely awry, and it's really awful and sad to watch.
Yeah, they kind of come up with a plan, right? Like you said, they're going to get Maximus out. He's going to be able to go rejoin his army, but unfortunately, Commodus catches wind of this plan from his nephew there. Bad move, nephew. Why do people keep taunting Commodus? He seems like one not to be trifled with. Even the nephew is like, no, I'm being the savior of Rome. Don't say you're the savior of Rome to the leader of Rome. That seems bad. That seems like a bad idea.
That's not a good
Lucius,
idea,
what
dude.
are you thinking of? What are you thinking of? So yeah, so Commodus is like, all right, now I have to kill everyone. So he does. He captures the senator. He goes in and they capture all of the gladiators. He has his people kind of set this trap for him there, where Cicero is hanged off of his horse, and they recapture Maximus. And Maximus goes. He has one more fight to give, but Commodus is going to take things into his own hands this time. And by his own hands, I mean he's going to stab Maximus before the fight starts, so he can be sure to win. But it's going to take more than one little knife wound to Russell Crowe to win this last fight. But it's beautiful, right? They come up. They have the He's rising up like on this riser. They have like the Roman soldiers are all around him with their shields down. It kind of opens up, and Commodus comes out there against Maximus, and they have this last fight to the death. I love the army comes in and kind of surrounds them, and Commodus starts yelling at him to give him a sword because Maximus has disarmed him. And Falco, I believe, is like everyone sheathe your swords. Don't give him a sword. This was his bed that he's made, and I guess we're gonna let him lay in it now. And lay in it he does. Commodus meets his untimely end, which apparently gives Maximus, power over Rome for at least the last couple of minutes of his life. Says, "Free all the people and senators. You're in charge now, and I'm dead now."
I mean, yeah, it's a little bit more poignant than that, but yeah, it is that way. I really like that Commodus, of course, can't. It's not enough that they like mortally wound Maximus before he goes out, right? It's not enough that he. I don't know if that was like just a poisoned stab or just a regular stab in like a special area, but they're like cover the wound, and so of course Quintus is like. Like this guy has no honor because he is covering Maximus's wound and they're fighting. But Maximus, I mean, he fought tigers and won. This guy's no match for him at all. And you can see it like within the first like 30 seconds. Like poor Commodus, he doesn't have a choice. He does not have a chance. But he continues to try and fight. He asks everybody else to give him a sword. They're like, absolutely not, dude. You're on your own. But then, of course, he goes and he has this dagger, and it's that dagger that ends up being Commodus's undoing, right? Because if he didn't have the dagger, he wouldn't have gotten, I don't know what he does, get stabbed in the neck or something. It's pretty gross. And Maximus lays on the ground, he ends up falling to the ground. Lucilla comes out and talks to him, and I love this. It's very similar to the feeling that you get. The score kind of rises. You get this really beautiful like look back in at the fields, and he sees his wife and his son kind of waiting there, ready for him as he's going to his version of heaven. And it's really beautiful the way that he kind of feels. You feel that he's lifted and he's honored. Lucilla tells, everybody who's listening that he was a soldier of Rome, and they kind of carry him out. They leave Commodus's body just hanging
Leave them.
there. They just leave him there. And I find that really interesting. Like, there's got to be hundreds of people who are in the stands going, what just happened? Did we really just see this?
Yeah, I imagine it was a pretty shocking day there for the citizens of Rome who were on hand. But yeah, they totally just leave them there. I want to talk a little bit about kind of the way that this looks coming in. I don't know how much of it was practical, how much of it was some special VFX sort of thing going on, but the entire like stadium floor of the arena is covered in these rose petals, and it looks absolutely beautiful. It even looks beautiful when they're carrying Maximus out, and Commodus is just left laying there. And we're going to kind of get one final thing, right? Maximus goes back into his little dream or vision there, where he's going through and he opens the gates and he goes and sees his family. But Juba is going to come back out and bury those little figures there. He says, "I'll meet you one day again, but not today." And he buries the little figures there in the floor of the Colosseum, which is really, really a beautiful thing there. Good job, Juba. And that is kind of where it ends. It's a tale of revenge and political intrigue, and Maximus is able to get the one up and fulfill Marcus Aurelius's last wish, is to turn Rome over to being a republic again, I guess, in the way that it was founded. Really, really good stuff there. So, Michaela, as you mentioned, it had been a long time since either of us had seen this. I think I've probably watched it a little bit more recently than you. It was something I'd watch every couple of years, at least for the first few years after it came out. But this movie is very highly regarded. It's like ranked in, I don't know, it's like number 37, I think, on IMDb's top film list and stuff like that. What were your thoughts going back to it versus when you watched it originally?
So originally, I think I was comparing it too much with the previous epic film that I had seen that I thought was amazing, which was Braveheart, right? And for the longest time, I would say Braveheart was one of my favorite movies, if not my favorite movie of all time. I know it's not historically accurate. We can debate about that later. That's fine. But I thought that this was not as good. So when the movie came out, I was like, well, it's no Braveheart. I will say that having grown up in the last 24 years, I've developed a much deeper appreciation for all the things that went into this from a artistic rendering and just the special effects. I love the score of this movie so mm-hmm. much. And it's a score that I think is reused, or at least pieces of it have been reused or drawn inspiration for other kind of epic, you know, battle sequences yeah. that have happened since then, right? So I think it aged beautifully.
You hear the kind of that main theme on a lot of just like film type things where you're watching like behind the scene stuff, or like, you know, at the Oscars and stuff, they'll play that theme from Gladiator a lot, and it's Hans Zimmer. It's a little I don't know, it's kind of interesting. It's similar to the Dune soundtrack in that way, where you have kind of this big like sweeping thing, and then there's stuff that's almost like this like industrial rock sounding pieces in it. It's really strange. It's kind of all over the place, you know, very Hans yeah. Zimmery. But yeah, definitely that main theme is a movie classic for sure.
Yeah. I love the testament that it is to friendship, and the characters really do stand the test of time. I think this film has done really well. The special effects are amazing. They're still amazing. I mean, it's almost a quarter of a century old, and Rome still looks amazing. That sweeping Colosseum view, where you kind of are going over the Colosseum and doing this kind of wide look at everybody who's there. And I have no idea how they did that, but that is still one of the most amazing shots that I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And so, I really love this, and I love the story. I think that, again, Joaquin Phoenix as Commodus is one of the worst villains. I think he's in the top 100 of like worst villains of all time. I don't know how high he is, but because he's just so gross and horrible, and he just doesn't care. Right. He doesn't have any, like, he's just completely amoral and power hungry. He does not care what he has to do. He would, even he says, like, I would bathe in your son's blood if it would get me what I wanted. Like, he does not care. And he's so amazing at it.
He's so very conniving. And yeah, just kind of that first like opening or like monologue he has there in front of his father, you know, telling him all the virtues that he does have. And they're all of these things that I guess on one hand might make you a good leader of Rome for sure. But yeah, this was really good to go back to. I probably haven't watched it in, I don't know, 20 years, maybe something like that. But yeah, it definitely holds up in terms of the special effects and the sound design and all of that stuff really, really well. All of those, big famous lines still hit kind of the same way that they do when you're watching it the first time. And yeah, just kind of the epic scope of it. It was a weird time in the year 2000. We were kind of getting into this more like digital filmmaking and what kind of doors that was going to open up. And you know, for me, it was that stuff that really propelled it. It had the battle in the front. You kind of compared it to Braveheart. And to me, that felt very pedestrian and slow compared to Braveheart. It wasn't nearly as big and epic in that first kind of war battle there with the Roman army. But then the stuff you're bringing it inside of the Colosseum and the way that the cinematography worked there was really, really beautiful. Just so glorious to watch. And you know, it's glorious anytime you get to watch Joaquin Phoenix in something, because even in stuff that he's been in that hasn't been great, he's still great for sure. And he was great in this, and I love kind of the characterization of that. I love Lucilla as a character and how she's kind of playing both sides, and she knows exactly what kind of string she can pull and what she can kind of get away with Commodus right there at the beginning, right after she basically realizes that he killed her father. She goes in and, you know, slaps him in the face and then kisses his ring, right? She knows exactly what she can get away with in terms of Commodus. And I guess she's going to be a pretty major player here in the second Gladiator. If we get that here in the next year or two, whenever that's supposed to come out, I guess it's going to be focusing on her son, but she's going to be there. So we'll have to see how that story plays out. Maybe drink the movies. Part two of Gladiator part two. I don't know, Michaela, but this was a good one. I was very excited to watch it, and I was very excited to have this busy little bee cocktail, because it was a perfect accompaniment to going back to this 2000 epic adventure.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I just want to say one thing. So the woman who plays Maximus's wife in all the heaven stuff, right? They do a really good job of conveying what happens to his wife and son without it being too gory. I mean, this is not for kids, right? This is rated R. It should be rated R.
It's plenty not, gory enough.
Without, it's plenty gory enough. But Giannina Fascio, she ends up being married to Ridley Scott later in life. I don't know when they dated, but how long they dated for, a very long time, but they got married in 2015. So, you know, everybody, I think on set felt that this was someone worth dying for. And it's so, I really love that, tidbit, because I was like, who is that woman? 'Cause she's quite striking in the scenes where he feels, where Maximus is seeing her, and the sun is on her and the wind is blowing through her hair. And it's just this very hopeful kind of idea. It's, and it ended up being Ridley Scott's wife. He was like, I love that too. This is my idea of heaven. That's kind of cool.
That's right. That's right. There's a, yeah, exactly right. So that is Gladiator. So let us know at home if you make up a Busy Little Bee cocktail. Send us pictures and let us know what you thought about that. And let us know what you think about Gladiator. Let us know where you think it stands in terms of historical dramas, of, you know, these epic adventures of Ridley Scott films. Let us know all that stuff. You can do that on our social medias. That's at Drink the Movies on Instagram and X and Threads and Blue Sky, and on facebook.com/drinkthemovies. You can go to our website if you want to see pictures of our Busy Little Bee cocktail, find out the written recipe, episode recaps, all that stuff is there on the websites. And if you're looking for some Drink the Movies and merchandise, you can do that now too. We just opened our merchandise store here this past week, and that is drinkthemovies.square.site. Getting some new stuff added here over the next couple of weeks, so keep an eye on that and let us know if there's anything you would love to see there. Go ahead and check out our Patreon if you want some more behind the scenes stuff, bonus episodes, extra cocktail chats and hangouts, all that good stuff. You can do that on our Patreon. It's patreon.com/drinkthemovies. That's the best place to go to support the podcast. And we definitely appreciate all of our patrons over there very, very much. Michaela, we also appreciate people who have taken the time to subscribe to the podcast and to leave us reviews, because that is what we need. You know, you make people love us, and then we'll be set free in the podcast world. Michaela, where can they do that?
That's right. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Good Pods, anywhere where your rectangle can get podcasts. What you're listening to us on right now, I'm sure there's a subscribe button. You just have to find it. We really love what we're doing. We're only able to do this because of people like your good self who subscribe, listen, share with friends. So if you're loving what you're hearing, leave us a 5-star review, share with us, share with your friends and all your peeps on social media. It is the best job in the world, and we don't get to do it unless you're there to listen to us. It's not like it's like if we create a podcast and no one hears it, does it still exist? I don't know. It's very existential. So help us answer that question by not having us answer that question, by having your friends listen to this as well. That'd be great. Thank you.
Wow. Yes. Yes. Do all that stuff. So thank you so much for joining us. We definitely appreciate it. Let us know what you think about Gladiator, and let us know if you're looking forward to Gladiator too. Mix up a cocktail, and we'll talk to you next time on
Drink the Movies. Shadows and dust.
Shadows and dust. Oh, apparently Juman Honshu Juba is going to be back in Gladiator Part 2, so maybe it's not going to be all bad.
Pedro Pascal is going to be in it. It's going to be okay.
Paul Mescal, Denzel Washington, the whole crew, everyone.